This program contains coarse language and violent content. It is for mature audiences only. Rated L, V, AC for language, violence, and adult content. Parental discretion is advised. Hey, welcome to this episode of Light 'Em Up. We take a deep dive on the criminal justice system, crime scene investigation, and leadership. We enlighten, educate, and empower others with the truth. Like it or not, the truth disturbs, the truth divides, but ultimately, the truth delivers. Hey, I'm your host, Phil Rizzo. I'm the principal owner of Rizzo's Protective Group. We are a high-risk security consulting firm headquartered out of Akron, Ohio, and with offices in the Bronx, New York, and Cerro Alto, the Dominican Republic. Hey, as we put the ball on the tee to line things up for kickoff, we speak life, health, and prosperity over each and every one of you, and we want to thank you for joining us tonight on this highly charged episode of Light 'Em Up. We investigate and drill down on what you need to know about how law enforcement officers use low-level traffic and equipment violations in order to pull you over and justify a broader search of your person and your vehicle. We'll also explore what is commonly defined as officer-induced jeopardy and how it relates to pretextual traffic stops as we continue our work within the community to build trust, relationships, awareness, and mutual understanding while endeavoring to persevere in reducing your chances of being pulled over by police and having that encounter turn deadly. Without delay, let's focus like a laser on the pretextual issues that law enforcement uses to pull you over. In U.S. law, a pretext usually describes false reasons that hide the true intentions or motivations for a legal action. You may be asking, what is the purpose of a pretextual traffic stop? A pretextual traffic stop occurs when a police officer stops a vehicle in order to conduct a speculative criminal investigation unrelated to the motorist's driving and not for the purpose of enforcing the traffic code. An example would be, a police officer suspects that a vehicle contains drugs and stops the driver because he or she fails to use their turn signal for a turn. Pretextual traffic stops are often used by law enforcement as a method to initiate a stop and search of automobiles suspected to involve criminal activity. A pretextual traffic stop involves a police officer stopping a driver for a traffic violation, minor or otherwise, to allow the officer to then investigate a separate and unrelated suspected criminal offense. Pretextual traffic stops allow police officers wide discretion in whom they choose to stop and for what reasons they use to justify the traffic stop. By law, police officers must observe a legitimate traffic violation in order to stop an automobile. Police officers, however, have come under fire from individuals who charge that police officers stop their automobiles based on race rather than any supposed traffic violation. In response, police officers repeatedly deny they use the passenger's race as a determining factor in stopping an automobile and claim that they had legitimate reasons for stopping the automobile. Police officers also support their automobile investigative methods, knowing that they have the courts on their side. Courts have held, in most situations, that pretextual traffic stops as an effective tool to find and confiscate illegal drugs. By using a legitimate traffic violation as a pretext to eventually search an automobile that an officer suspects is involved in illegal activity, such as transporting drugs, he's able to make numerous traffic stops to catch a few criminals who may have otherwise gone undetected. While the government may have a compelling interest in fighting the war on drugs by ignoring certain citizens' claims of constitutional violations by police officers, the government virtually conveys to these citizens that their rights will be compromised whenever this country needs quick solutions to its problems. Not only are police officers able to make traffic stops based on countless offenses, they also hold the decision-making power as to whom they will ticket for traffic offenses. It would be impossible to issue citations for every citizen, nor would citizens want tickets issued for every possible traffic offense. While allowing police officers discretion in whom they stop and ticket may be common and legal, this power also may be abused, especially when the police officer allows race to help determine whom he or she will or will not stop for a traffic violation. Hey, let's start from the understanding that the system is rigged against you, especially if you are an individual of color. Let's be honest. Police officers can not only use hindsight to pick a traffic violation to use as a reason to support their stopping any motorist, especially a black motorist. If they travel long enough behind any vehicle, they almost always can find something wrong with the car at the moment of stop. Therefore, police officers can easily mask their racially motivated traffic stop with a legitimate reason, and the courts typically support them 100%. Some traffic offenses for which a police officer may issue a citation include an object such as a crucifix or baby's booties or perhaps a pine tree-shaped air freshener or anything hanging from a rearview mirror. These are considered to be an equipment violation. Hey, when time permits, go to your car and make sure there isn't anything hanging from your rearview mirror, except maybe a handicap placard, if that applies. Perhaps the officer may use the age-old following too closely behind the car in front of you. Well, let me tell you, that's a judgment call. And unless dashcam video footage tells otherwise, then this is simply going to be the officer's word against yours. Or perhaps going 1 or 2 miles an hour over the speed limit. That's pretty petty, I have to tell you. That's pretty petty if it's enforced. Also, I've heard of headlights being too bright or failing to signal. To legally stop a person, a police officer must have at least reasonable suspicion of criminal activity. Terry v. Ohio, 1968. The reaction to the police killings since the shooting of Michael Brown in Ferguson, Missouri, the police shooting of Terrence Crutcher in Tulsa, Oklahoma, Breonna Taylor in Louisville, Kentucky, Amir Locke and George Floyd in Minnesota is about more than a specific individual incident. It's about the overall system that makes such deaths of minorities at the hands of police disproportionately common. On a typical day across the U.S., law enforcement officers make more than 50,000 traffic stops, which translates to nearly 20 million annually. In a study of nearly 100 million traffic stops nationwide, on average, black and brown drivers are ticketed, searched, and arrested at a rate much higher than white drivers, and are 20% more likely to get pulled over by police than their white counterparts. A Stanford University study that analyzed data covering 93 million traffic stops from various state highway patrol agencies and 29 municipal police departments between 2001 and 2017 reached similar conclusions. Our goal with tonight's episode is to educate and empower you, our listeners, and to help policymakers find ways of improving interactions between the police and the public that they're charged with protecting and serving. Our intentions are not to bash the blue, so save your breath before you start to lodge your vile comments and complaints on our YouTube page that we bash the blue. Know this fact: the police are not above the truth nor the law. No one is, not even the President of the United States. If members of law enforcement can't handle legitimate, constructive criticisms, then they shouldn't be public servants. We are uniquely aware of the challenges faced by those who serve daily as police officers. We see their commitment firsthand every day, and we recognize the complex issues that make their already difficult jobs even harder. Many of our dear friends either were on the job or currently are on the job. We supported law enforcement on January 6th. While many talk a good game about backing the blue, If the truth were be told, many were really more interested in attacking the blue rather than backing them, and many others didn't care. But that's not us. One aspect of Light 'Em Up's mission with this show is to ensure that our listeners are fully aware of their state and federal constitutional rights and that federal statutory rights for all people are protected. Hey, as I explained in our previous episode, we will stay on the Jaylen Walker case when we have something new to report. Furthermore, we will pursue any case and investigate any issue that focuses on a police department's conduct or misconduct, patterns and or practices or methods of operations in order to help fulfill that responsibility to you, our listener base. The investigations that we've undertaken and the recommendations and actions that ensue do not only protect individuals' civil rights, they also assist police departments in developing measures to increase transparency and accountability. Hey, after all, at the end of the day, what could be more important when the conversation is about leadership than transparency and accountability? Those qualities are essential to building trust between law enforcement and the communities they serve. And community trust is essential to making policing more effective and less dangerous for officers on the street. As I've told my criminal justice and forensic science students, we'd be the last to say that all law enforcement officers are bad. I will, however, share these truths that I know to be for certain. When law enforcement, under the right leadership, works hard day in and day out to take back a city from the criminal element, all the good work that the officer does can be undone in a blink of an eye by one cop who treats a citizen disrespectfully or who breaks the law in order to enforce the law. In doing so, he or she violates the public trust, which Sir Robert Peel spoke so clearly and cogently regarding in his 9 principles of policing. And for the record, that quote isn't coming from me. That comes directly from Bill Bratton, who served 2 terms as the New York City Police Commissioner from 1994 to 1996 and 2014 to 2016. He previously served as the Commissioner of the Boston Police Department from 1993 to 1994 and Chief of the Los Angeles Police Department from 2002 to 2009. Hey, rip straight from the current headlines, we see the recent federal convictions of Derek Chauvin, Thomas Lane, Tu Tao, and J. Alexander Kung, who under the color of authority violated the civil rights of George Floyd. Chauvin received a sentence of 22 and a half years. Thomas Lane received 2.5 years. J. Alexander Kung received a sentence of 3 years, and Officer Tu Tao received 3.5 years. While I know for certain that it won't change things over the long haul, for these specific former police officers, this will serve as a temporary wake-up call that law enforcement isn't above the law and certainly isn't above improving on their policies, practices, and procedures that directly relate to their contact with the public. We've reported to you in our previous episode that the Akron Police Department has never come out specifically and expressed exactly what were the traffic and equipment and moving violations that Jalen Walker's vehicle had in order to immediately justify the initial traffic stop that led to him fleeing. And according to the police account, that a shot came from that car, escalating the situation to where they termed a public safety issue from the minor initial equipment and traffic violation, which was the stated reason for the initial traffic stop. You know, in all honesty, the exact same kind of theory was initially floated in the Timothy Russell, Melissa Williams case. The alleged gunshots, which never took place, were the defining moments in the event that triggered a 25-minute high-speed car chase that ended with Timothy Russell and Melissa Williams dying in a hail of police gunfire. Six, that's right, six Cleveland police officers fired 137 shots, when in fact, it was a backfire from the 1979 Chevrolet Malibu SS parked in front of Cleveland's Justice Center that Russell and Williams were inside. Among the cops that lost their jobs over these senseless murders was Michael Brillo, the only officer criminally charged for the shooting who was acquitted by Common Pleas Judge John P. O'Donnell of two counts of voluntary manslaughter in May of 2015. Brillo came under particular criticism after the shooting for his brazen use of force. After his colleagues stopped firing, he allegedly stood on the hood of the car and fired the last shots downward into the windshield. In total, Brillo fired 49 shots. Hey, whether it be for a broken taillight, as was the case for Philando Castile, 32, who did everything correctly and according to the book, yet was still fatally shot by Geronimo Yanez, a Minnesota police officer, after being pulled over. Let's pause for a moment to listen to the body-worn camera of Officer Yanez and this tragic traffic stop.
Well, sir.
Good. How are you?
Good.
Reason I pulled you over, your brake lights are out. So you only have one active brake light, and that's going to be your passenger side one. Your third brake light, which is up here on top, and then this one back here, is going to be out. You have your license and insurance?
Pulled over for a busted tail light in the back, and the police, he's covered. He killed my friend. He's licensed to carry. He was trying to get out his ID and his wallet out his pocket, and he let the officer know that he had a firearm and he was reaching for his wallet, and the officer just shot him in his arm. We're waiting for a back. I will, sir. No worries. I will. He just shot his arm off. We got pulled over on Larpiner.
I told him not to reach for it. I told him to get his hand off it.
You told him to get his ID, sir, and his driver's license. Oh, my God. Please don't tell me he's dead. Please don't tell me my boyfriend just went like that.
Just keep your hands where they are, please.
Yes, I will, sir. I'll keep my hands where they are. Please don't tell me this, Lord. Please, Jesus, don't tell me that he's gone. Please don't tell me that he's gone. Please, officer, don't tell me that you just did this to him. You shot 4 bullets into him, sir. He was just getting his license and registration, sir.
Get the female passenger out.
Ma'am, exit the car right now with your hands up. You see your hands. Exit now. Keep them up. Keep them up.
Face Where's my daughter? You got my daughter?
Face away from me and walk backwards. Walk backwards towards me. Keep walking. Backwards. Keep walking.
Or whether it be for an expired registration tag on a license plate, as when Dante Wright was killed last spring by police officer Kim Potter outside of Minneapolis in a case that drew national attention.
Hey, what's going on, man? You got a driver's license and proof of insurance for me at all? You don't have a driver's license? Okay. What's your name? You're Dante? Okay, gotcha. Well, there's a couple things reason why I stopped you. The air freshener hanging down there. Yep, can you, and then our other question is your tabs.
Yeah, there is five. I'm getting them at the moment, but due to corona stuff, if they're taking slow, I have a set up an appointment.
Okay. Do you have any, who's the car registered to? What's his name? Okay. All right. Do you have insurance for the vehicle then? You got any type of identification at all? Yeah. Yeah, just keep looking for the insurance, and then I'm gonna write your name, date of birth down, all right? So. What's your first name? How do you spell it? D-A-U-N-T? Okay.
T-E.
T-E? Okay. What's your middle name? R-I-U-S? Okay. What's your last name? Okay. And then what's your date of birth? Okay. Sounds good. Alright, just keep looking for that. Oh, you don't have a driver's license, you said, so... Where do you stand? Okay. Okay, I got you, man. What's an address for you, you said? 2814 North Lane Drive. Phone number for you. Okay. 3360? Okay. Alright. So I'm assuming there's just no insurance in there then, or? So this is definitely not it. It expired in 2017. So does your brother have a valid driver's license? Okay. Dallas, okay. Let me see that again, the insurance there. You said, so it should be registered to him, right? Okay. Does this name insured is Taylor R. Pagel? So Corvette and Buick. It came back as Dallas, yeah. So I'm gonna make sure, okay. Alright. Well, just since I never heard back, man, just keep looking for the insurance, okay? Okay. Hey, Dante. Alright, man, here, do me a favor. Just step out of the car and I'll explain what's going on. You can just put your phone on the dashboard there, okay? And then the paper. I'll explain all that in a second, okay? Just turn around. Put your hands on your back. Okay, so you are going to be under arrest, okay? You do have a warrant, so. Don't. It's enough, bro. Don't do it. Just bring it back.
Hey! Don't.
PI Access 63rd and Captain Drive, flight from 38 stop, start north on the red. Standing north on the red, then you repeat your first plate.
Or for having only one plate on the vehicle, as was the case with Samuel DeBose, who was shot by Officer Ray Tensing, a University of Cincinnati police officer. A case which prompted the Ohio legislature to prevent police from pulling drivers over for only one plate. As of July 1st, 2020, Ohio law no longer requires display of a front license plate. Light 'em Up also recalls on April 4th of 2022 the encounter with Officer Christopher Schurer and Patrick Loyoya that began with the routine low-level traffic stop that we've discussed happens daily across the U.S.
1913.
Hey, stay in the car! Stay in the car! Stay in the car! Get in the car! Dude, I'm stopping you. Do you have a license? Do you have a license?
For what?
I'm stopping you. Do you have a license?
What, Dad?
Do you have a driver's license? Do you speak English?
Yes.
Can I see your license?
What, Dad, you want?
The plate doesn't belong on this car. Do you have a license or no? Do you have a driver's license?
Yes. Yeah,
where is it at?
It's in the car.
Get it for me.
What, Dad, you want?
The plate does not belong on this car.
Amen. That means my life right there. Right there.
No, no, no. Stop. Stop. Put your hands right. Stop. 1915. You got one running. North bound. Stop. Stop.
Okay. Damn.
Stop. Stop.
Okay.
Get your hands behind your back.
Okay.
Hands behind your back.
Okay.
Put your hands behind your back.
Okay.
1950, seven more cars.
Okay.
Stop.
Okay.
Stop resisting.
I'm gonna do a dream to you.
Let go of the taser!
What's the problem?
Let go of the taser!
Nathaniel Edwards in Rock Falls, Illinois. Marvin Urbina in Bakersfield, California. And James Hartfield in Little Rock, Arkansas, all suffered a fate such as this. None were armed. All were individuals of color. Police shouted commands like, "Open the door, I'm gonna shoot you. Hands out the window or I'll shoot you. I'm gonna shoot you, what part of that don't you understand?" Within moments of officers shouting those threats at those individuals I mentioned, all were dead. You don't want to do anything that will increase your chances of being on the receiving end of threats such as these. These are just a few of the great many minor infractions which led officers to chase and pull over hundreds of thousands of motorists, and which on more than 400 occasions, these actions led to the death of drivers they pursued. Again, a disproportionate number are black and brown people. This is all how the process unfolds. No casino would want you to know their processes. If you know these things ahead of time, forewarned, becomes forearmed. What we're sharing with you is all part of the necessary ingredients for pretextual traffic stops that law enforcement use day in and day out on the highways and byways in every city. These pretextual traffic stops are the beginning of a fishing expedition, and these fishing expeditions statistically happen more often to individuals of color. Hey, if the best time to prepare for an emergency is before one occurs, not during nor after, then this is precisely what we're doing. So, how do you go about not unnecessarily exposing yourself to the risk of being pulled over by police? There are some things that cannot be controlled for. If racial profiling is taking place, no number of precautions can prevent that. But let's focus on what is within our power to impact upon and control for. Number one, make sure your automobile insurance is up to date. Two, don't drive with an expired license or registration. Three, if you have wants and warrants, how long do you think you can run from the law before the law finds out? You know, the song goes, I fought the law and the law won. I fought the law, there you go, and the law won. So be a man and handle your business so that your business doesn't handle you. Don't try to beat or buck the system and not have your vehicle registered with the BMV by using the plates for one vehicle on another. You see, you can't be a law-abiding citizen and be Al Capone at the same time. None, and I repeat, none of the big-time gangsters ever won in the long run. Al Capone died of syphilis in the joint. John Gotti died of throat cancer in the joint. As a public service for our listeners, here are five items that you need to control for and make sure that you are not making yourself an exposed target and rendering yourself eligible to be pulled over by police. Number one, let's talk about safety belts. Ohio's mandatory safety belt usage law requires drivers and front seat occupants of most passenger vehicles to wear safety belts whenever they drive or ride in a motor vehicle on Ohio's roadways. All occupants must be wearing safety belts when the vehicle is being driven by a probationary license holder. The law provides for a $30 fine for drivers and a $20 fine for front seat passengers found to be unbelted when stopped for another violation. Number two, let's give attention to the all-important child restraints. Infants and children who are either or both under the age of 4 and weigh less than 40 pounds must be properly restrained in an approved child safety seat while being transported in a motor vehicle. The child seats you select must be labeled as meeting federal safety standards and be designed to meet the needs of your particular motor vehicle. A child safety law violation is a primary offense, which means a police officer can stop a vehicle for the purpose of enforcing this law. The law applies to all drivers of all vehicles that are owned, leased, or otherwise under the control of their agency to use a car seat when transporting small children who meet the law's definition for age and weight. The law also applies to handicapped and medically fragile children. There are exemptions according to the law, and they are public safety vehicles, taxicabs, and vehicles not required by law to be equipped with safety belts at the time of manufacture. Fines for a child safety seat law violation are $25 to $100 for a first offense, which is a minor misdemeanor, $250 maximum for a second or subsequent offense, which is a misdemeanor of the fourth degree, and or imprisonment of not more than 30 days. Also, as it relates to minors, the number of occupants of a vehicle. If you are a driver under 18 years of age, the number of vehicle occupants is limited to the total number of originally installed safety belts. These are things that some people don't know and don't pay attention to. Let's talk about the often overlooked but essential license plate illuminating light. Every motor vehicle shall be equipped with a white light in working order placed to illuminate the rear registration plate. And I see this issue often. Window tinting. The acceptable percentages of light transmission for motor vehicles are, for your windshield, the tinting must allow 70% light transmission. This level is equivalent to the amount installed as standard equipment of most new cars. Also, front seat and passenger side windows, the tinting must allow 50% transmission, plus or minus 3%. And motorists can call their local State Highway Patrol post for the location of the nearest motor vehicle inspection team to see if their windows comply with the law. Violation of the law is considered a minor misdemeanor with fines up to $100 for tinting issues. And although it may be fun and enjoyable in the moment, and many people like to do it, especially on a hot, hot summer day, it will invite law enforcement to find you and target you if you blast your music from your car. Doing this tells law enforcement, "Hey, look at me, look at me." It invites them to light you up. The city ordinance in Akron, Ohio, 132.13 of the code, speaks to disturbing the peace. It reads, Section A, no person shall disturb the good order and quiet of the municipality by clamors or noises, by intoxication, drunkenness, fighting, quarreling, wrangling, committing assault, assault and battery, using obscene or profane language in the streets and other public places to the annoyance of the citizens, or otherwise violate the public peace by indecent and disorderly conduct, or by lewd and lascivious behavior. Section 132.16 of the ordinance speaks directly to sound amplifying devices. It reads, no person shall generate or permit to be generated unreasonable noise or loud sound which is likely to cause inconvenience or annoyance to the persons of ordinary sensibilities by a means of a radio, phonograph, television, tape player, loudspeaker, or any other sound amplifying device, or by a horn, drum, piano, or other musical or percussion instrument on a street, highway, or in the public right-of-way where the sound is audible, 100 feet from the device generating the sound. Hey, let's pump the brakes and let's discuss traffic infractions. Now, traffic infractions are typically how law enforcement makes the majority of their contact with the public. The majority of driving-related offenses are classified as infractions, also called violations or civil infractions. A traffic infraction is the least serious traffic offense and is typically defined as an act or omission that's prohibited by law but isn't a crime. Some common examples of infractions include speeding, failing to stop or yield, failing to signal, operating a vehicle without proper lighting, and not wearing a seatbelt. Hey, perhaps maybe you've been pulled over for one or two yourself of these infractions throughout your driving career. I know when I drive long distances, I typically drive with the hammer down and exceed the speed limit by about 10 or so miles per hour regularly. I know I'm wrong, but I accept the consequences if caught. The point is, you can minimize the chances of you being pulled over by the police. In the times we live in, it could well be a matter of life and death for you. You know, I think it is equally as important to know how the law looks at an officer-involved shooting so that once you know how the police, the prosecutor, and the law looks at the incident, you'll be better equipped to avoid placing yourself in any situation that may expose you to deadly force from an officer of the law. To understand the parameters of this debate, it helps to first look at the set of basic questions that always comes up when a law enforcement officer comes under legal scrutiny for using deadly force against a civilian. The general questions are, was the officer justified in using deadly force? Was it reasonable for him to fear that the suspect posed a threat of death or serious bodily harm to him or others? And would other officers have acted the same under the circumstances? These questions arise because of the 1989 Supreme Court ruling in Graham versus O'Connor, which established the constitutional test by which all use of force cases involving the police must be evaluated in court. We want you to know this. It's imperative that you know this. Many don't know this, so when the verdict continually comes back not guilty, not guilty, not guilty for the actions taken by law enforcement, they wonder why and become infuriated. The why is because it's the law. The ruling classified the use of force as the form of a seizure, meaning that it was subject to the Fourth Amendment, which protects against unreasonable searches and seizures. It also included several key lines that have since been cited endlessly by lawyers defending police officers from excessive force lawsuits. The first of these key lines stated that the use of force incidents had to be evaluated from the perspective of a reasonable officer on the scene rather than with 20/20 vision of hindsight. The other said, the calculus of or how they determine or reach this conclusion of reasonableness must embody allowance for the fact that police officers are often forced to make split-second judgments in circumstances that are tense, uncertain, and rapidly evolving about the amount of force that is necessary in a particular situation. But there are two possible ways to apply the reasonableness standard set forth in Graham to a case like that of Tamir Rice. One looks only at the moment when the officer decided to fire his or her gun. That is the position that Cleveland prosecutor Timothy McGinty and the grand jury took in deciding not to indict. The other wide frames out and examines the choices that the officers made leading up to that moment. The first approach, which was advocated by the policing experts that McGinty hired to testify before the Tamir Rice grand jury, says that we shouldn't Monday morning quarterback the tactical decisions of our police officers. The other says that we should. As David Radofsky, a civil rights lawyer in Philadelphia, stated, he said, as a matter of police professionalism and as a matter of law, if an officer acts recklessly in creating danger for him or herself, he shouldn't be allowed or they shouldn't be allowed to say, I was justified because he or she was about to hurt me. This is sometimes referred to as the final frame versus phases of the encounter question. And I must say, the Supreme Court is vague about how it should be answered. On the one hand, the Graham ruling specified that we should consider the totality of the circumstances, but on the other hand, it zeroed in on the split-second decision an officer makes when applying the use of force. There is arguably good reason for this apparent ambivalence. Different situations call for different tactics, and the law has to be flexible enough to allow officers to respond to crisis situations swiftly. You know, we've covered a lot of distance in a short period of time. So we've examined how one can try their best to prevent being stopped by the police for minor traffic and vehicle equipment violations. But let's be realistic. Sometimes the police will be profiling or decide that you or your vehicle fits the description of a vehicle or suspect wanted or supposedly wanted in another investigation. If you do, in fact, get pulled over by the police, you need to be aware of the very real possibility that your safety is no longer entirely in your hands. Don't make any furtive movements. Keep your hands clearly visible at 10 and 2 on the steering wheel. Your actions and the actions of the officer or officers who are on the scene now begin to be of very real importance to the issue of, will you survive this traffic stop or not? Like it or not, officers routinely put themselves in jeopardy, thinking perhaps reasonably or perhaps not that every citizen they encounter is armed and ready to shoot at them. Their presumption or assumption of danger on many occasions breeds overreaction. There's a term for when an officer creates a dangerous situation that too often these days end up being resolved with deadly force. That term is officer-induced jeopardy. Officer-induced jeopardy. Tamir Rice's death was a result of officer-induced jeopardy. The two police officers involved in the death of 12-year-old Tamir Rice in Cleveland were not charged with the crime. Timothy Lowman, a rookie officer at the time, shot Tamir Rice on November 22, 2014, after he and his partner, Frank Garmback, confronted the 12-year-old boy at a park in response to a 911 call about a man with a gun. It turned out that the, quote, gun Rice was carrying wasn't real. A fact that has made the tragedy of his death stand out from the many other cases of police-involved shootings in recent years. But Lowman and Garmback didn't know the gun was merely a pellet gun, nor, and this is the kicker, nor did they take the requisite time to try to learn these essential facts prior to driving their cruiser within about 7 feet of young Tamir. Security camera footage of the incident shows that Lowman opened fire on Rice less than 2 seconds after he and Garmback pulled up. As Chuck Wexler, executive director of the Police Executive Research Forum, a nonprofit that works with law enforcement agencies around the country, shared, we expect a lot from our police officers. For example, in an active shooter event, we expect officers to step up and act immediately and get the bad guy. For a police officer to pause in those situations, that's not what we expect, as we so painfully observed with law enforcement in Uvalde, Texas. On the other hand, in these other situations, where they're dealing with an extremely disturbed person or a displaced or transient individual, our expectation is different. There we expect them to step back, to slow down, to get additional resources if necessary. Resolving that situation right away is not what is needed. What is needed is a more balanced, slowed down, and a stepping back, calling in additional resources kind of response as the situation needs it. Every situation doesn't require an immediate solution. It's important to distinguish between what is legal and what is right from a tactical standpoint. When it comes to training, he said, it's not enough to simply look at it from a legalistic standpoint. You want to look at it in terms of, are there options that could have been used that would result in less force being used? That's a higher standard than the legal standard. That doesn't mean we should be satisfied with the legal standard that is, by many accounts, a mess. In an email, University of Virginia School of Law professor Rachel Harmon explained that while the Supreme Court's whole orientation is on the moment of force, it has not precluded looking at reckless conduct by the police officer himself or by the department that could contribute to making force reasonable. The matter is consequently unresolved, with some circuit courts having ruled that the moments leading up to a deadly confrontation cannot be taken into account, and other circuit courts saying that they have to be taken into account. Even within the Sixth Circuit, whose jurisdiction includes Ohio, rulings are split, with one decision from 2008 concluding that where a police officer unreasonably places himself in harm's way, his use of deadly force may be deemed excessive, and in another from 2007 saying that precedent instructs us to disregard events leading up to a killing and to focus on the split-second judgments made immediately before the officer used allegedly excessive force. The prosecutors in the Tamir Rice case clearly favored the latter interpretation. Nevertheless, it is an undeniably confusing state of affairs that leads to inconsistent application of the law, and some policing experts would like the Supreme Court to clarify the matter. Jeff Alpert, a criminologist at the University of South Carolina, and Jeffrey Noble, a former deputy police chief in Irvine, California, put it this way in a textbook chapter on police tactics. They wrote, the circuit courts that advocate a final frame analysis are overlooking the holding in Graham that requires careful attention to the facts and the circumstances of each case, and are focusing only on whether the suspect poses an immediate threat to the officers or others. Such a limited view prevents a thorough analysis of what could be the most intrusive action that can be perpetrated by the state, taking the life of one of its citizens. Most importantly, this wide disparity among the circuits demands some intervention by the Supreme Court to create a rule that may be uniformly applied. More than 400 drivers or passengers that were not armed with a gun or a knife or under hot pursuit for any violent crimes, a shocking rate of one per week over the past 5 years, have been killed by law enforcement. Most motorists were killed while attempting to flee. I know this sounds pretty simple, but here it goes. Don't flee. Doing so will only add the charge of fleeing or eluding and make matters worse. The minute the officer perceives that you're using your vehicle as a weapon, they pretty much have legal carte blanche permission to fire at you. Don't give them that power. Know that the largest U.S. cities such as New York and Los Angeles have barred officers from shooting at motor vehicles. Still, don't flee. For decades, the U.S. Department of Justice has pressured and urged police departments to forbid practices such as this. Police academies don't even train recruits on how to fire at a vehicle. The risk of injuring innocent people is considered to be too high to undertake this practice. You gotta know this. Stopping a car with a bullet is more along the lines of wishful thinking. Carmen Best, the former Seattle police chief, said in an interview, "If you think the vehicle is coming towards you, get yourself out of the way." 9 officers have been fatally run over, pinned, or dragged by drivers in vehicles that the officers approached for minor or nonviolent offenses in the past 5 years. Here's the kicker that you need to know. The reality of the situation is this. In many instances, local law enforcement, state highway patrol officers, and sheriff's deputies place themselves in harm's way and at serious risk by jumping in front of moving cars, then aiming their guns at the drivers, something you'd see in a Hollywood police drama or motion picture. Or, against their academy training, they reach into the car and become entangled with the driver and then open fire. There have been times when drivers have tried to edge around the officers on the scene, not forward, towards them, where officers were not in danger, yet they still fired anyway. The streets of the U.S. are tough enough without giving the police a reason to confront you and put your very existence at even more jeopardy than it already is in, given the many other dangers our society presents on any given day. What's in your power to do to prevent these encounters, you should do. Forewarned is forearmed. We've tried our best. Now you take it from here. Hey, I'm Phil Rizzo, and you've got Light 'Em Up. Hey, I want to thank my friends at Innisfree for their promotional products and underwriting. Their fresh-squeezed hydrating green tea, loaded with amino acids and antioxidants, help replenish and neutralize skin for that natural glow. Want to know the best part? Their tea is organically grown and chosen for skincare from 3,301 Korean native green tea varieties. The winning 1-2-3 punch combination consists of the youth enhancing serum with black tea. Then you just dap a little bit of the eye serum underneath your eyes, and finally the enhancing cream. Oh my goodness. Like Muhammad Ali used to say, I'm pretty, I'm still pretty. They offer innovative beauty solutions for men, also powered by the finest natural ingredients, responsibly sourced from Korea's pristine Jeju Island. Their proprietary extraction methods preserve the purity and potency of these wholesome ingredients from plant to bottle to your skin, offering advanced formulas that safely address all skin concerns without the use of harmful chemicals and preservatives. With the wonders of nature at the heart of Innisfree, they take care to preserve and protect the environment in all that they do. We want to thank our friends at Innisfree for their promotional products and underwriting of Light 'Em Up. Hey, don't forget to subscribe to us on YouTube and Instagram at Rizzo's Protective Group. We're very excited about being ranked 10th out of the top 35 criminal justice podcasts as ranked and listed by FeedSpot. Hey, don't forget to subscribe to FeedSpot at www.feedspot.com. And please, por favor, per favore, visit our friends at https://newsly.me. Newsly is an audio app for iOS and Android. It picks up web articles about the most trending topics on the web at any given moment and reads them to you in a natural human voice. For the first time in the history of the internet, the entire web becomes listenable. You can browse articles from topics you choose and start playing. Hey, stop scrolling, start listening. You can follow any topic, as specific as you like, from sports, science, to Bitcoin. It'll find you the latest articles and read them to you. Hey, it's as easy as that. And to top it off, they have podcasts as well. Explore trending podcasts from over 50 countries. Our podcast, Light 'Em Up, is there too. I started using it as my default podcast app, and you can too. Download and use Newsly for free now from www.newsly.me or from the link in the podcast description liner notes and use the promo code Light 'Em Up. And Light 'Em Up in this case is spelled LGHTEMUP. All one word. That's LGHTEMUP. All one word.